Money FM 89.3. Best of the Evening Runway. The Evening Runway with Elliot, Tim, and Tien Tien. Eurowatch.
Money FM 89.3. Good afternoon. It is the Evening Runway. I'm Elliot Danker. Time to take a look at key headlines out of the European region. Reeling from the shock of terrorist group Hamas assault inside Israeli territory over the weekend, the European Union's Palestinian policy quickly fell into disarray. European Neighborhood Commissioner Oliver Vahe took to X, formerly known as Twitter, on Monday to announce that $732 million of development aid for Palestinians would be suspended. The European Commission quickly issued clarifying statements that essentially amounted to a major backtrack. Let's find out more about this EU reaction to the Hamas-Israel conflict and take a look at the economic ramifications as well. On the line with me is Chedemian Estraveku, who is Professor of Geopolitics, Essec Business School, Asia Pacific. Professor, good afternoon and thanks a lot for joining us.
Good afternoon, Elliot. Thank you for having me.
It's quite a tricky situation that we're talking about today, the economic ramifications of the Hamas-Israel conflict, the European Union's financial aid to Palestine as well. EU, of course, the biggest external provider of financial support. Tell us a little bit about this. First of all, what exactly are they trying to clarify here? It kind of sounded like a backtrack.
Yeah, so there was, a little bit of confusion because immediately after the aftermath of the massacres during the last weekend, some voices in the European Union wanted to suspend all the aid to the Palestinian Authority. But immediately, we also have a certain number of countries such as Spain, but also France, which refused to suspend. However, on the other side, they wanted a clarification about who is the direct recipient of all this money. And obviously, they don't want that the Hamas is the recipient of the money coming from the European Union.
Yeah. Professor, I mentioned the EU is the biggest external provider of financial support to Palestinian territories. So if we were to take that away, how crucial is that in terms of Palestinians staying afloat? I mean, they did talk about who receives the money to begin with.
Yeah, so that's right. So it is the biggest, provider of help. However, the European Union is not the only one. You have scores of Muslim or Arab countries which are also helping, but you also have the multilateral organizations, so it can be the Islamic Development Bank or it can be someone else. So we have many of them who are actively supporting the Palestinian territories that we have in Gaza. Mm-hmm. However, the Hamas is not only a military organization. It is, in fact, ruling Gaza.
Yeah.
So it means that the ramifications that we have are present everywhere, in education, in health, in economy, and so on. So I presume that it will be extremely difficult to have a clear-cut line and say, no, we don't want to provide money for this project because there might be Hamas behind it, but it is present everywhere.
Yeah, well, that's true. And I'm sure it's a constant topic of discussion. Could potentially provide for a bigger blow if, let's say now, because we mentioned that it's not just the EU that's providing support as much as it's a large amount. What if everyone else that's providing support, all the other nations, turn around and say, you know what, this is a good question that's being raised. We don't want to send aid as well.
So this could be a big blow. However, I cannot imagine that the other providers, especially coming from the Arab and from the Muslim world, that they will ask the same, accountancy about what is happening with this money. So the European one, definitely. The American one can do it also. The Japanese, the Koreans, etc. Mm. All of them, they can ask for the accountancy and responsibility, but not the others. So I don't think that it will have a big effect, especially when the war is over. So I presume and I hope that it will be over very soon.
Yeah.
There would be the reconstruction.
Yeah.
So this reconstruction will be in billions. So it will not be in millions of dollars. Yeah. But this will be even harder to track.
Yeah, that is for sure. Professor, on one hand, we've got the economic implications. On the other hand, there are other issues to look at. EU Commissioner Thierry Breton sounding a disinformation alarm with Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg over the Israel-Hamas conflict, the EC threatening penalties under Digital Services Act if X, formerly known as Twitter, doesn't take measures to stop it. It's still there's still this problem on how social media can accidentally promote the wrong kind of propaganda.
In theory, but also in practice, sects can control anything.
True.
They can suspend accounts, they can suspend the different posts, etc. So it is, I won't say easy, but technically they can do it.
Okay.
Now, Elon Musk has built all his reputation on the so-called freedom or liberty.
Yes.
So I cannot imagine that Elon Musk will say, I try to control what is happening there, because the demand is coming from the European Union. The European Union is only 27 countries.
Mm.
We have 193 countries, and we have 56 countries in the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. So if he surrenders to the European injunction, the other countries may complain, why do you do this?
Yeah.
Because the European Union is not the only one in the world. And for Elon Musk, okay, this is a big market, but maybe it's not, let's say, the only market that it has.
I'm sure he's also probably thinking about if he backtracks on the principles of X, what'll that do in terms of his share price? But Professor, when you have laws like Digital Services Act, I mean, I know the EU is very big on such things as well, privacy, data privacy. It feels like a big step forward, yet at the same time, not quite enough to stop, you know, the wrong messaging being out there online.
So I would say that the European side is in advance when we consider other jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm.
However, in Asia, but also in Singapore, we also have the control of some of this kind of hated posts, etc. So this is not something new. We can do it. Technically, you can do it also. The only problem is to see where is the limit and who is setting the limit. Is it jointly set by the company and the regulator, or is the regulator doing it?
Okay.
In all businesses, we like the regulators, because the regulators are fixing the limits, and these limits are, in fine, also giving us the rules of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So if we don't have the rules of the game, it is total anarchy, mm-hmm. and it is not good for the companies themselves. So they love to see the limits. The problem here is that it is a nascent technology, so we don't know who has to fix the limits. Is it the company or the government?
Yeah, the finger pointing in that sense. Professor, let's move on to Brussels. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky making a surprise visit to NATO in a bid to boost military deliveries ahead of winter. Hamas-Israel conflict, impact on the war in Ukraine. What are your thoughts on that? How much does it distract?
I think that Zelensky must do something, because we have seen in the past a few weeks, we have a certain fatigue about the war in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And many countries, especially the neighboring countries such as Poland, have voiced their concern about that. On top of that, we have now the situation in Israel and in Gaza.
Yeah.
So it means that Ukraine is practically sidelined. It is not front news anymore. So the President Zelensky has to do something in order to keep it on the front news, in order to that people don't forget about what is happening there. So coming to the NATO summit is a first. So if he did this, for instance, 1 week or 2 weeks before, this would be the biggest line in newspapers.
Mm.
But because of Israel and Gaza, it is not. So now it is losing a little bit the dynamic that we have there, and he needs the dynamic in order to have the ammunition, in order to have the weapons. Otherwise, they cannot survive the winter.
Well, there is one dynamic that's being speculated, and I want to get your thoughts on this. It's an economic question. If, let's say, aid is being diverted to focus on the Israel-Hamas conflict, what does that do for Moscow's economy, Russia's economy, as far as the price of oil is concerned?
So for the moment, everything which is happening in Israel and Gaza is benefiting Russia, because the prices of oil are going up. Russia is one of the biggest suppliers of oil worldwide. So obviously the Western countries don't want to buy oil from Russia, but other countries want. And there are also ways how this Russian oil is also going to the European countries, or even to the United States if necessary.
Mm.
So the point that we have here is that it can be diverted because the attention is not on oil and on Russia anymore. So it is benefiting Russia on one side. On the other side, I think also that OPEC must come up with a policy in order to control all this, because otherwise we will have prices of oil of more than $100 a barrel, And in that case, this will have a huge impact on the world economy, worldwide economy, and not on some countries.
All right. Professor, let's talk about Poland now. It's going to be quite a pivotal election next week. The outcome will reverberate in Europe, Ukraine, the US, of course. Let's talk about Poland's relationship with the EU. Where is it at the moment?
So it is, I would say, not complicated, but I would say that it is like a double-edged sword that we have between Poland and the EU. On one side, we desperately need Poland because it is the neighbor to Ukraine. It is the biggest supporter of Ukraine. They have received the biggest Ukrainian number of immigrants, etc. So we badly need Poland. And on the other side, Poland is having some policies that are considered to be anti-European, especially on the migration side. And they don't like this, also concerning justice, concerning the media, etc. So I would say that if there was not the attention for Ukraine, the European Union would be extremely hard on Poland. But since we need Poland because of Ukraine, the European Union doesn't know how to behave. Should it be hard? Should it be soft? Should it try to find a middle way? I presume they will find a middle way because they badly need Poland because of Ukraine.
Yeah. This issue of migration has long been around. I mean, you look even 10 years ago, conflict in the Syria area and how areas like Spain had to deal with the fallout all of it. How can this dynamics perhaps flip or work to the advantage of Poland?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that the wind has changed now. Because, as you have mentioned, several years ago, when the Syrian immigrants came to Europe, it was refugees welcome everywhere. But now, even in Germany, you have the AfD, which is the Alternative for Deutschland, which is the far-right movement, which is definitely anti-immigrant. It's now the party number two in the recent elections. In Sweden, in Denmark, in all other people, in all of the countries that have been the example of, let's say, social democracy and the acceptance of migrants, they have abandoned this idea. So it will be more and more difficult to accept more immigrants. So it means that the position that Poland has defended 10 years ago is a position which is close to Germany and to other countries today.
Yeah, almost like history repeating itself. Professor, I do appreciate your time and your insights. I've been speaking with Cedemir Nestrovic, who is a professor of geopolitics, Essex Business School, Asia Pacific. Professor, thank you again. Take care and have a great Thursday evening.
Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.